Blog Talk Radio.
So the other day we reported on the whole slavery thing with the TPP. We have some verification today, so there's an update to that story, which I'm going to kick it off with in just a little bit here. We also have, I have two, like, slavery-ish stories. The second one is actually happening in America. So it's not just a situation where we are outsourcing to slave nations, or nations that tolerate slavery. No, it's even more direct and more at home if you're somebody who lives in the U.S. Then we have, I got so many far right wing lunatics who I will be bashing today, so you can get very happy at the prospect of me crushing them. Mark Levin is one of those people. Bill O'Reilly, Brian Fisher's back in today's show. We haven't spoken about him in a while. Elizabeth Warren went on a passionate rant defending Planned Parenthood, and Joe Scarborough attacked her. So naturally, I will attack Joe Scarborough. This is the way the world works, the way the world goes around. And later on in the show, Ted Cruz has a new strategy to reach out to the Republican base, get them hard, make them sexually aroused. Hold on, you'll see exactly what I mean later. I don't want to ruin it now, but that'll be at some point in, I don't know, the third block. But let's get started here, and we'll kick it off with the TPP, some more on the TPP, and it's bad. It's real bad. So the other day, we reported that Malaysia magically had their human rights ranking upgraded at the same time as an anti-slavery provision was added to the new free trade bill, the TPP. And today we have the verification that indeed it was the Obama White House that pushed for the change. Huffington Post reports on this. They say, top diplomats at the State Department repeatedly overruled human rights experts in the crafting of a recent report on human trafficking. An upgrade for Malaysia effectively makes the country eligible for participation in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a controversial trade pact the Obama administration is negotiating with 11 other Pacific Rim countries. Now, they also go on in the article to point out that the Obama administration prevented a downgrade of China in the report. So China apparently was going to become a Tier 3 human trafficking nation, which means that in some cases they just flat out tolerate slavery. The Obama administration said, no, that's not good for politics, that's not good for business, so we're going to prevent the facts from getting out there. And also, they upgraded unjustly Saudi Arabia and Cuba. So Saudi Arabia has a litany of issues that they're dealing with, and the U.S. is turning a blind eye to it. We've been turning a blind eye to it forever because they're our oil sugar daddy. But the Obama administration actively said to the experts crafting the report, hey, don't say that Saudi Arabia is a nation that tolerates slavery or has all these other issues. Say it's not because they're our buddy and we need to protect them with the report. And even for Cuba, how in order to try to push through the Cuba deal and to get peace with Cuba, they're pretending like there aren't as many abuses in Cuba as there are. Now, understand, you know, me, for example, I'm still for ending the embargo and trying to get just not a standoffish attitude towards Cuba. You know, I don't want to treat them as any worse than any other nation. I'm not saying I want to be buddy-buddy with them and cuddle with them on the weekends. I'm just saying, hey, we should end the embargo and end the standoffish attitude that we've had going all the way back to the 1960s until today. But with that being said, you can have that position, but still acknowledge that facts are facts, and that the human trafficking report should reflect the reality of the situation everywhere in the world. You shouldn't be able to upgrade nations for political reasons or downgrade nations for political reasons. I mean, this is insanity. This is ludicrous. We're talking about basically a conservative Republican-like trick, where if you don't like what the facts are, just doctor the facts and say, see, now we were right all along, now you have to do what we say. But you're not any better than them when you act like that. And remember, man, it's fucking mind-blowing. We're talking about a president here who got a Nobel Peace Prize, and meanwhile, he's working hand-in-hand with conservative Republicans and multinational corporations, and he's working specifically to make it appear like Malaysia doesn't tolerate slavery, even though they do. And the reason he's doing that is because, well, we need to get this so-called free trade deal through and done, a.k.a. we need to outsource more American jobs, and we need to get cheaper labor, and the billionaire class has ordered me to be their puppet, to be their bitch, and I'm going to be their bitch, and I'm going to do whatever the fuck they want, even if that means I'm turning a blind eye to slavery. There's some sort of tragic irony in the fact that the first black president of the United States of America is turning a blind eye to slavery when it comes to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You know, we do this amazing thing, or people in power do this amazing thing where they compartmentalize and they rationalize and they try to make themselves think that they're not pushing for the things that they're actually pushing for. Perfect example of that is George Bush and Dick Cheney in the Iraq War. I don't doubt that they really thought on some level, we're going to be the world policemen and we're going to uphold the proper value system and we're going to do what's just and what's right. And we are going to take out that brutal dictator Saddam Hussein, and we're going to do it all because what would the world be without a strong America to protect it? I don't doubt that on some level they believe that. But in the name of that, what did they effectively do? They did everything that they claimed to hate. They became the bad guys. They did an offensive war against a country that didn't attack us, and then they stayed there and occupied there, took the natural resources, took the oil. In Afghanistan, they took the minerals, and they guarded the opium fields and things like that. And you had the military-industrial complex, defense contractors, getting incredibly rich off of war. So they may think they're being good people, but their actions speak louder than words. You are what you do. And in that case, we acted like a classic imperialist nation. By the same token, bring it to today with the TPP and Obama and the Republicans who are backing him, because, of course, it's the hardline Republicans who would back something like this. What are they doing? Obama wants to get a pat on the back for, oh, my God, historic free trade deal. Look at this guy, man. It's basically the same kind of mindset that gets Obama to do good things in other respects. So like Obamacare, for example, where it's not a single payer, so it's not the best option. It's not a public option either. But the same mindset that got him to check that box off. Yay, historic reform, check. Obama gets something added to his legacy. Dodd-Frank reform, very vanilla, very weak. It's got tremendous loopholes in it. But he gets to check the box of historic Wall Street reform. Strongest reform since Glass-Steagall. Because why? We haven't done any regulation or reform since Glass-Steagall, except to get rid of regulations. So, but he gets to check the box. Oh, yay, everybody, pat me on the back. I did something historic. Yes. Well, here we're talking about the same thing. You know, disregard the facts of what these so-called free trade deals do and forget how they hurt the poor and the middle class and they exploit third world workers and just say, hey, the people love me, the billionaire class loves me, and I got a historic free trade deal through. Very similar, Bill Clinton was the one, people don't remember this, Bill Clinton was the one who signed on to NAFTA. NAFTA outsourced good middle-class American jobs, shut a bunch of factories, and shipped the jobs to Mexico, and then there are other free trade deals, permanent normal relations with China. We ship jobs to China, under the same mindset and the same philosophy. And President Clinton, he did it. He got a pat on the back from the establishment. So his legacy is sealed. Oh, yes, a historic economic trade deal. But the problem is what? The problem is you don't understand that these deals hurt the American people. They don't help the American people. Or perhaps you do understand that, but you have to overlook that because your puppet masters and your overlords are telling you you have to act this way or else you're not going to get our support and we're going to try to tank your party and You know who you really have to work for anyway, because we gave you all that money when you were running your political campaign. We can speculate as to what the reasoning is behind it, but bottom line is, we do have a situation in America right now where the first black president is turning a blind eye to slavery and forcing a free trade deal through, flat out lying about the fact that there's a nation that tolerates slavery, and getting them in the deal and giving them a pat on the back for doing that slavery, because guess what? We're going to get to, corporations are going to get to exploit that cheap labor as a result of this. So just pretend like there is no slavery, and you'll get a pat on the back from the establishment, and you'll get a good name in the history books. Well, fuck that. We're going to call it out for what it is, and we hope that this is something that tarnishes your legacy. This is something that's unbecoming of somebody who won the Nobel fucking Peace Prize. You should be ashamed by this, Obama. Okay. More stuff on slavery. A lot of fucking slavery talk today. The LA Times has an incredible report out today about the forced labor of undocumented immigrants in America. They say, quote, U.S. family detention facilities, which are often run by private companies, are coming under fire for putting undocumented immigrants to work for little or no pay. Migrants cross the border into the U.S., then find themselves rounded up into the detention facilities and put to work cleaning, landscaping, cooking, and performing other functions that would normally be handled by hourly workers. So in the article, they detailed the story of one woman in particular. They say, quote, she made $3 per day cleaning bathrooms, hallways, and other parts of the detention center. She could buy her son a bag of potato chips for $4 or a bottle of water for $2. The prison facility is run by Geo Group, which is the country's second largest private prison company. Some people have not been paid at all for working. Being held by Immigration and Customs Enforcement is not supposed to be punishment, and there are three family facilities for holding immigrants and 80 other facilities around the country. ICE receives funding to house 34,000 immigrants daily. So we're talking about a situation here where people are working, they're getting little or no pay, and it's 34,000 undocumented immigrants locked into a private system. Again, run by Geo Group, the second largest private prison company in the U.S. So they cross the border, they get caught, they're brought in to work for little or no pay, and they're forced to do things, and then they're overcharged for anything that, you know, they would need to survive, like water. Hey, $2 a bottle. Well, the most they make is $3 a day. Some make nothing. So what are we talking about here? Here's the most chilling line from the ACLU in the article. They say, quote, we have a name for locking people up and forcing them to do real work without wages. It's called slavery. So this is modern-day America right now. Now, we've spoken about similar issues before. One of the things that they do is they'll take undocumented immigrants immediately from when they come into the U.S., and then they lock them up. And then they lock them up in an actual prison, not these which are detention facilities, which are like legal limbo. But they'll take them, they lock them in an actual prison, a private prison, and then they charge you, the taxpayer, and you know they mark it up tremendously. They make a significant profit on it, and then they try to keep them in the system as long as possible. Because when you have private prisons, you've just incentivized people to lock up people. You've made it so that now, for money, they must lock up people and they must keep it at full capacity, or else that money flow stops and you don't want to run out of money, do you? So either you have undocumented immigrants come in, they get locked up in a private prison, and the taxpayers get robbed to lock up undocumented immigrants. Either that, or people come in, 34,000 of them, they go to a detention facility, which is like limbo, and they get paid little to nothing to do work, and then they're overcharged whenever they have to purchase anything anyway. So either we are unjustly locking them up, or we're forcing them to do like indentured servitude / slavery. Okay, conservatives, where are you? I need you on this one. You're the people who scream about undocumented immigration and how wrong it is and how terrible it is. And here we have a situation where liberals and conservatives can agree. And our agreement is, why should we have to spend any money, tax dollars, to private detention facilities or prisons to lock people up who are undocumented immigrants who haven't even committed a crime other than just coming into the country. Why wouldn't you just immediately deport those people? Now, remember, we're not talking about the 11 million undocumented immigrants who have been here for an extended period of time and they've set up a life here. That's a different story, and those people, you guys know, as I've said, I would grant amnesty to those people and have a path to citizenship. But we're talking about a situation where people who just crossed the border, and for profit, they're either put in a detention facility or a private prison, and then you set it up so that GEO Group and all these corporations can just rob the taxpayers. Here's an area where we have bipartisan agreement. Conservatives would say what? Well, if they cross the border, just deport them, of course. What would liberals say in that scenario? I mean, look, I'm a liberal. I just told you if they've been here for a long time, that's a different conversation. But if they just crossed the border and your choices are private detention facility, private prison, or just deport them, of course I'm going to say just deport them. Why not? So it's amazing what we've done in America. And remember, man, this is the stunning part. What the establishment wants is the worst of all worlds, is what I just described to you right here. The establishment wants to continue this. Why? Because of corruption and bribery and money in politics. The private prison lobby gives money to the politicians to run their campaigns, and then when they get elected, they set up systems like this specifically to function like this so that they can continue to give these people contracts and give these people tax dollars for locking up people when they shouldn't fucking be locked up. It's a ruse. It's a scam. It's all for money. Wise up to it. This isn't something that's a solution. It never was intended to be a solution in the first place. It was intended to shake down the taxpayers and take away the lives and the freedom of these people who cross the border just looking for a better life. So this is unacceptable, man. And yet again, I'll repeat myself. This is an area where we can have liberals and conservatives agree. You're doing the worst thing you could ever do, locking them up in prisons, without a trial, just to shake down taxpayers, private prisons, or you're just sending them to private detention facilities to make them do slave labor or a version of indentured servitude. How about neither of those things? How about shut down all those facilities that are engaged in this practice, totally drop private prisons because there's terrible incentives in that system, and just make it so that if somebody crosses the border immediately and they're caught right there, yeah, of course you deport them. You do it in a safe, humane, rational way. But that's the solution to that specific problem. I think we can all agree on that. Okay. Isn't that incredible, man? Oh, the things you learn. The things you learn, the things you know. Okay, next. Now let's go to Fox News and Mark Levin. I don't know how many of you guys know this guy. I can't remember the last time we covered him. But going to get it today, that's for sure. Right-wing radio host Mark Levin went on Fox and Friends, and he made a hilarious claim about the Democrats.
North Dakota doesn't really have an unemployment problem because of fracking.
That's correct, which, of course, they're attacking.
And
the rules yesterday that Obama put out unconstitutionally, it's an attack. You know, the Democrat Party used to stand for blue-collar workers. They used to stand for coal miners. They used to fight black lung disease and things of that sort. That's the Democrat Party I grew up understanding. Now it's this hard left radical party, and now they're putting these men and women out of business. They're attacking middle-class Americans.
Mark, is that why Debbie Wasserman Schultz the other day and a couple days earlier had such trouble trying to explain to Chris Matthews and to Chuck Todd the difference between the Democrat Party and the Socialist Party?
Because they don't want to tell the truth. There is a difference. The Democrat Party is to the left of the Socialist Party.
Isn't it hilarious when I say things that are false? These guys are ridiculous, man. The Democrats are to the left of socialists. The Democrats are to the left of socialists. Mark, the problem with the Democrats is not that they're too far left. The problem with the Democrats is that they're too far right. And your party, the Republican Party, is damn near fascist. We're talking about religious theocrats. We're talking about pure authoritarians. Today's Democratic Party, I mean, look at the policies they propose. The policies that they propose are the Republican policies of the 1980s and 1990s. That's literal. That's not my opinion. That's a fact. For example, on global warming, they proposed cap and trade. Cap and trade was the Republican solution to stop acid rain. It was a free market solution to a pollution issue. So that became the Democratic position, and the Republican position on climate change is, it's not real. Get off my lawn. Obamacare, health care. Obamacare is an individual mandate system. First proposed one version of it by a guy named Richard Nixon. Later on, there were policy papers written about it by right-wing think tanks like the Heritage Foundation. Newt Gingrich and Chuck Grassley and other House Republicans supported that kind of legislation, an individual mandate. Well, the Democrats had to abandon what they really want, or what they're supposed to want, which is Medicare for All. They even had to abandon the compromise position, which is public option, to get the only thing that could get through Congress, which was the old Republican plan, the individual mandate plan. That's what Obamacare is based on. That's what it is. So there is no factual basis to say that today's Democrats are to the left of socialists. Oh, please. The furthest left politician that we have in America, you could argue, is Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or maybe Alan Grayson or somebody like that. And these guys are not even socialists. These guys are well to the right of socialists. Now, Bernie Sanders might refer to himself as a socialist, but if you go strictly by the political science definitions and terms, it's clear that Bernie Sanders is a guy who doesn't want to scrap capitalism and start from scratch and do a different kind of system altogether. No, he believes in a Scandinavian-type system. He believes in a system where you have efficiently regulated capitalism with safety nets and with, you know, a proper mix of socialism and capitalism. We're not talking about somebody who's really a socialist in the purest sense of the term here. So think about, they just don't know what the fuck they're talking about when you look at Fox News, when you look at the conservative hosts like Mark Levin. I mean, they think they're so smart, they think they're so bright, but I wish anybody would push them on this garbage. I wish somebody would push back and just say, that's an interesting claim, prove it, back it up. Give me any evidence whatsoever that today's Democratic Party is to the left of socialists. My ass they are. How ridiculous a comment that is. People overseas oftentimes talk about how there is no real left in America. Where's the fucking left in America? This, you know, the Bill Clinton, President Obama, Hillary Clinton, I mean, these are people who are, you know, at best centrist, pro-establishment corporatists. But in reality, I would even argue they might be center-right establishment corporatists. Where's the real left in America? Are you kidding me? FDR would scoff at this Democratic Party, be like, ha! You call these guys socialists? They're not even liberals. So he's just dead wrong, but just last thing real fast. Even the thing about fracking is ridiculous. You know, the Democrats, they're against fracking. Apparently my Mark Levin impression is the same as my Ted Cruz impression. But he says, oh, they're against fracking because they don't want the jobs. Huh. Yeah, that's it, Mark. You got us, man. We're against jobs, which is why we proposed the stimulus plan, which is why we wanted to do a new deal, which would have created more jobs, which is why we're constantly standing up for the poor and the middle class. No, you're right, man. We don't want jobs. It's that simple. No, Mark, see, it's a little bit more complicated than that. You know it's more complicated than that, but you're actively avoiding the nuance because you're being disingenuous. The reason why people on the left, including myself, oppose fracking is because, oh, I don't know, it's been proven in study after study that it causes fucking earthquakes, and on top of that, you poison the water supply, and people have to leave their homes and their family farms because they start losing their hair and getting all these different skin rashes and lose a tremendous amount of weight and have all these health problems. Maybe that's why we're against fracking, but no, I know. It must just be that we hate the jobs. We're against the jobs. No, it can be much more complicated than that. For example, I'm very pro-jobs, which is another reason why I'm against the TPP. I want those jobs to stay in America. But am I for all the military-industrial complex jobs? No, because those jobs are tied to killing people unnecessarily overseas. So it depends what kind of job you're talking about. If your job is to build missiles that I don't think we should be building, sorry, find a new fucking job. By the same token, if somebody's paid to go out in my front lawn and clip the yard using nail clippers, I'd say, that seems inefficient. I'm going to have to fire you and bring somebody in with a fucking lawnmower to do so. It's not that to be like, oh, jobs, they're against jobs. It depends what kind of jobs we're talking about. If your job causes earthquakes and poisons the water supply, fuck your job, find a new fucking job. Okay, again, these things should be obvious, but in the right-wing bubble, it's just slander Democrats, throw mud as much as possible, and make shit up. And you can clearly see it here. Okay. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Bill O'Reilly went on another ludicrous rant against liberals and Planned Parenthood. We'll get into Joe Scarborough, who did the same. And later on, Chris Christie tells you who one of his biggest enemies is. Oh, boy. Stay right there. We're back, bitch.
You thought Mark Levin was bad. Wait till we get to Bill O'Reilly.
Bill O'Reilly went on another ludicrous anti-Planned Parenthood rant. It's also an anti-liberal rant, unsurprisingly. Let's watch.
Problem with liberalism. That is the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. No matter who wins the Democratic presidential nomination, they will toe the liberal line. That's because the Democratic Party has been taken over by the far left. Few moderate Democrats have any currency in the party. That was demonstrated once again today when only two Democrats voted to defund Planned Parenthood. The measure failed because the Senate could not get 60 votes to move forward. All but one Republican senator voted to defund on principle. That man is Mark Kirk from Illinois. Now, there's no question Planned Parenthood is an abortion factory, and there's no question the group sells the body parts of dead babies or fetuses. Yet the Democratic Party doesn't care. So my question tonight is, what happened to liberalism? The liberal philosophy is based upon fairness for the underdog, helping those who are down and out, protecting the defenseless. Yet unborn babies don't count. How does that work when the liberal line urges social justice? Finally, let's take a look at three cities run by uber-liberal mayors. Over the weekend here in New York City, 25 people shot, three of them died, victims and perps, mostly black. Same thing in Chicago, 40 people shot, three of them died. Baltimore, 15 people shot, five of them died. African-Americans, the victims, and the perps primarily. So where is the group Black Lives Matter on that? I guess Black Lives Matter not so much in cities run by liberal politicians who cannot control the streets. No matter how many facts Talking Points presents on the economy, on crime, on foreign policy, on individual behavior, liberals will not admit their philosophy has gone off track. Thus, we have a presidential election coming up in 2016 that will once again pit the liberal philosophy against a traditional one. If facts matter, the election should not even be close. If facts matter.
Yeah, that's right, Bill. Random disconnection there, but as I was saying. Yeah, Bill, you and I agree on that. If facts matter, the election won't be close. It's just that the person that you want to win shouldn't win. The Democrat will win if facts matter. So let's go through some of his horseshit there. He says, well, the Democrats have been taken over by the far left. We just went over this in the Mark Levin clip. There is no far left in America. Bernie Sanders, who's considered the furthest left, is right in the middle of mainstream American opinion when you go to the poll numbers and you see what the American people actually want on the issues, whether it's wars or the minimum wage or taxing the rich or what to do with Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and things like that. Bernie Sanders is the American people. So this so-called far left is the mainstream of the American people, but the Democratic Party is in reality far to the right of the American people, and unfortunately they agree way too much with the Republicans, and they're both parties are doing the bidding of the corporations. So the problem is the exact opposite of what Bill O'Reilly's laying out there. And then when he starts talking about Planned Parenthood and abortion, he just runs with the bullshit line that has been debunked completely by various fact-checking organizations since the release of these tapes. He says, well, they sell dead babies, body harvesting babies for body parts. That's not true. If you look at the tape in its total context, or the tapes in their total context, you find out very quickly that we're talking about scientific research, that these people who are part of a right-wing group lied to them and said that they were scientists. In reality, they're not scientists. They're just right-wing hacks who are trying to take down Planned Parenthood. So that's exactly what happened, and unfortunately they were successful enough to get a fucking vote on that in Congress, which is unbelievable, which is unreal that some hack filmmakers who are propagandists are able to have that much of an effect. But again, as if you watch the entire thing in context, they were not selling dead babies. They thought they were talking to researchers who were going to use that for scientific reasons in order to try to cure diseases for people that are actually existing right now and living adults. So, and then obviously Bill O'Reilly flips it and he says, well, if you are in favor of defunding Planned Parenthood, you're an extremist. But the people who want to defund Planned Parenthood are the moderates. Well, no, Bill, you flipped it. That's not the reality. The reality is that if you're in favor of defunding Planned Parenthood, then you're the extremist. And then he tries to make it like, well, how does that work that liberals are in favor of the downtrodden, but they're fine with, but they're in favor of abortion? Well, if you actually listen to our arguments, it's actually very simple. We're talking about, it's not like liberals have this caricature view that the right-wingers make it out, like we're in favor of infanticide or something like that, where you kill babies. No. What we're saying is, hey, it's a nuanced thing, it's a complex thing, and you should allow abortion up to a certain point, and then you draw a line, and you have limited exceptions for rape and incest and life of the mother and things like that. But, you know, up until viability, for example, of course it should be the woman's choice. We're talking about a zygote and an embryo and a pre-gestation fetus, and we're talking about no nervous system developed yet, so there's no pain involved. And what's hilarious is as he's accusing liberals of hypocrisy, he's the one that's a hypocrite because he doesn't care about kids in poverty and giving them a social safety net and making sure they have some food to eat with, like, the food stamp program, for example, but he cares oh so deeply about a fetus. So you're the one who's a fucking hypocrite. You know, why don't you take all that concern you have for the fetus and put it towards the actual kids who are existing and who don't have the material well-being that they need in order to have a prosperous childhood and have a chance at equal opportunity? And then finally, the standard hack Bill O'Reilly argument of, oh, look at this, gun deaths in Chicago. Liberals don't care. Fuck them. But, Bill, you always say that they don't care, but they always say they do care. So when they say they care, you just ignore it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what anybody in the Black Lives Matter movement says, what any liberals say. Bill O'Reilly's going to say, oh, you don't care about the gun deaths in Chicago, in Baltimore. And they say, Bill, we do, and there are people there who are trying to make a better life for those people. Ah, but you don't care about it. But we do. You're just not fucking paying attention. Let me ask you guys, who are the people who are calling for an end to the drug war in order to decrease gang violence and decrease drug violence and make us you can – you know, legalize it, tax it, and regulate it so that it's safer. Who's calling for that? It's the liberals. It's the Black Lives Matter people. Who's calling for comprehensive gun reform at a federal level so that we can get some of the guns out of these inner-city communities and make them a safer place? It's the liberals calling for that. But whenever these guys call for a solution, Bill O'Reilly goes, ah, you don't care about these people. No, we do. You don't care about these people because you're the one that's actively blocking this. You said the other day that your solution to crime in the inner city is to flood the zone with cops. Well, if you listen to people like Michael Wood, who's, you know, a former Baltimore police officer, he says very clearly, we are an occupying army. We shake down the black community. It's an us versus them mentality. More cops isn't going to solve the problem. More cops is going to deepen the battle and further the war. So Bill O'Reilly clearly has no clue what the fuck he's talking about, but, I mean, we knew his agenda going into it. He said it at the very beginning. The problem with liberalism. Well, Bill, if you're so fair and balanced, I'll wait for that segment that you're guaranteed to do, which is the problem with conservatism. Oh, that's right. I'm sure that segment's not going to come. Okay. Whew. Now, we go to Elizabeth Warren. Well, actually, it's really Joe Scarborough who's berating Elizabeth Warren, but you'll see exactly what I mean here. Elizabeth Warren went on a very passionate rant in the Senate in defense of Planned Parenthood. Conservatives are trying to defund it after the release of some bullshit doctored videos that show Planned Parenthood reps discussing the sale of fetal tissue for what they thought was medical research. In reality, it was just a hack right-wing group pretending to be scientists, and they were trying to catch these guys sounding callous about fetal tissue and generate emotional outrage to try to defund Planned Parenthood. Well, Morning Joe wasn't having it. They didn't like Elizabeth Warren defending Planned Parenthood. And in the midst of her rant, Elizabeth Warren said that the GOP was trying to take us back to 1950 or 1890, which I think is totally true. And here's Joe Scarborough's response.
The Archbishop of Chicago said, have we so muted the humanity of the unborn child that some consider it acceptable to speak freely of crushing a child's skull to preserve valuable body parts? Was that acceptable in 1890 or 1950? The commerce of body parts, the Archbishop says, of defenseless unborn children is callously discussed over lunch. A woman who spoke yesterday on the Senate floor talks about a sheer disdain for human dignity and a complete disregard for women and their babies. And there are pro-choice people who believe fervently in the right of a woman to choose, who are equally repulsed, disgusted by those videos, and more videos are coming out, and they will be worse.
They're really bad.
They will be worse. And for Elizabeth Warren to try to fight the right of a woman to choose with the horrors and the callousness and the grotesqueness of what was discussed over lunch is really unfortunate. There are troubling things on those tapes, and everybody needs to open their eyes and see that instead of reflexively talking about right-wing attacks on a woman's right to choose. Please, stop insulting our intelligence, Elizabeth Warren. Stop.
No, you stop insulting my intelligence. That's exactly what they're trying to do. They're saying that's what they're trying to do. What are you saying? He's like, oh, stop pretending like this is an attack on a woman's right to choose. But the right wing is saying we are attacking a woman's right to choose because we think it's wrong. So what the fuck are you saying? He's defending a phantom Republican Party and a phantom conservative movement that doesn't exist. Hello, Eartha Scarborough, they're trying to, right now, defund Planned Parenthood. So Elizabeth Warren is fighting that, and you're going out there and in essence saying, I don't know why Elizabeth Warren is pretending like the Republicans are trying to defund Planned Parenthood. Because that's what they're trying to do. That's exactly what they're trying to do. They're clear about it. They're not trying to hide it. They're saying, hey, let's defund it. They're fucking voting on it. What? Like this guy, man, he's got fucking a cinder block for a head. What? At least be honest in your argument and say, I do think abortion is totally wrong, and I do think it should be outlawed, and here's why I think it should be outlawed. And, counter-argue however you find appropriate, but just know this is where I stand. But see, he can't do that, because if he were to be honest about that, then he would get torn down, and he would be destroyed in that argument. So he has to pretend like the Republicans don't believe what they fucking believe. And by the way, that those tapes have been thoroughly debunked. It was a right-wing hack group. They were pretending to be scientists, pretending to be researchers who wanted to try to cure diseases. So Planned Parenthood representatives were talking to them about getting them fetal tissue so they can work on curing the diseases. And oh, God forbid they spoke about money. But what they don't tell you is the money they were talking about were for transportation costs, which, of course, the fake researchers would have had to pay for if they wanted fetal tissue. But they edited the video to make it seem like, oh, my God, they're selling baby parts for profit. But they weren't doing that. That's made up. That's made up. So now what do they have left? It's all emotion. And it's so funny because the Republicans always act like we're the ones who are the harsh truth party. We tell the facts. We tell like it is. The liberals are too emotional and gushy. That's exactly what you're doing here. The way they spoke about the fetal tissue made me feel icky. Did you hear the scary music in the background? That really convinced me what they were doing was wrong. So you're the ones who are emotional. You're the ones who are gushy. You're the ones who are acting like, what happened was something different than what it actually was. And by the way, again, they want fantasy land because in their mind, what's the end goal? Let's totally get rid of abortion, make it totally illegal, and then abortion will be over with. It'll stop. Except that won't stop abortion. If you guys knew anything about the research on this, the Guttmacher Institute, for example, found that in many countries that have outright banned abortion, there are more abortions in those countries. And then there's another layer of terrible on top of that, because then women go to back alleys to get abortions with fucking coat hangers, and they get infections, and sometimes they die. So you just made it so that you created a bigger problem. You didn't solve a problem. You created a bigger one because there are more abortions, there are underground abortions, and now women get sick on top of it, and they're not legal, safe, and rare. And finally, Hey, jackass, you think maybe it's appropriate to bring up in the conversation that only 3% of Planned Parenthood funding goes towards abortion? No, you can't bring that up. Of course not. You can't bring that up. That's an inconvenient fact. That gets in the way of the Republican agenda to get rid of Planned Parenthood completely. Well, you know what would happen if you get rid of Planned Parenthood? You would see a tremendous increase in unwanted pregnancies, STD rates, a variety of social issues that Republicans say they're against. Bill O'Reilly rants every other night, out of wedlock birth in the black community. How do you solve that, dipshit? You solve it with condoms. You solve it with the pill. You solve it with IUDs. You solve it with Planned Parenthood. You solve it with education. You solve it with these free clinics. But these guys, again, they want to live in fantasy land. Let's end all abortions, all STDs, and all out-of-wedlock births. And on top of that, get rid of Planned Parenthood to do so. But that'll make the problem worse. You live in a contradictory world. What you want are competing things. You can't live in a world where you get all of that. But they think like children. Me wanting all of that, so I'm going to argue for all of that. And in the process of arguing for it, what does Joe Scarborough do? Just makes up what the Republicans want. The Republicans are saying, yes, we want to get rid of abortion. We want to defund Planned Parenthood. And Scarborough's all angry at Elizabeth Warren, saying, how dare you say that the Republicans want what they say they want? Okay. Next. Go to Brian Fisher. This will be last one, I think, before a break. Fundamentalist Christian radio host Brian Fisher has a new theory about what led to the Sandy Hook massacre of children. This is a touchy subject, but he doesn't care. Let's watch.
One of the questions comes up about, and this is like the shooting in Sandy Hook, and the cold-blooded killing of those children in their first grade classroom. How does that happen? Why does God permit that? Why doesn't God intervene? Well, Isaiah has an answer. It's not that he can't. It's because our sins as a nation have driven God from us. Here's what he says. Behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, or his ear dull that it cannot hear. But, so why is it that God doesn't save? Why is it that he doesn't hear? Your iniquities have made a separation between you and your God, and your sins have hidden his face from you so that he does not hear. Your hands are defiled with blood. This is, we lift our hands in prayer as a nation. What he sees is that is the blood on our hands of the 57 million unborn babies whose lives have been taken through abortion. So he can't hear our prayers because the blood of the unborn cries out to him, and he can't hear our prayers over the pleas of the blood of the unborn.
If your God really is omnipotent and knows everything and can do anything as you say is the case, and your God sat idly by as he watched children get massacred, I will not worship your God. I refuse to worship that God. I'm starting to think that perhaps Satan is more moral than that God. Who really is Satan, by the way? If this is the stuff that God permits, God's supposed to be the good guy and God allows this stuff, and what's Satan doing? I mean, Satan's got to be doing something a little less immoral than that if God sat by and watched this happen and was eating some popcorn. For fuck's sake, man, it doesn't make any sense. That's the thing. Logic is not the number one thing on his mind. He doesn't care about rationality. He doesn't care about reason. He's basically the equivalent of an emotional child. And, you know, he has voodoo thinking. And realize how little sense this makes, because you heard his argument right there. His argument is, why did God permit the killing of kids at Sandy Hook? Because he's angry about the killing of kids with abortion. So why did God permit a rape to happen here? Because he's mad about rapes. But if he's mad about rapes, wouldn't he stop the rape? If he's mad about killing kids, wouldn't he stop the further killing of kids? That makes absolutely no sense. It's a complete contradiction. Because God would be endorsing the act of killing the kids if he sat by and watched somebody kill the kids, you know, compared to abortion. If he's sitting there and watching abortion happen and he's angry at it, wouldn't he want to work overtime to try to prevent all this stuff? Wouldn't he say, oh, I can't allow abortion, and of course I'm not going to allow the killing of actual kids as opposed to fetuses. That would be worse. And another really important aspect of this conversation is Brian Fisher thinks that his Bible and the scripture is against abortion, and it's not against abortion. We discussed this just the other day on the show, and I find myself bringing it up more and more now because nobody knows about it. But if you actually read the Bible, you'll find out very quickly the Bible is not pro-life. It's not anti-abortion. There's a part in the Bible where God goes through Samaria and rips out the fetuses from the women's stomach. That would be God doing abortions. They could call it whatever the fuck they want, but it's an abortion. There's another part where God says that a wife who cheated on her husband needs to drink bitter water. It's this like toxic potion where if she drinks it and she miscarries, a.k.a. has an abortion, well, that's okay because the baby wasn't yours. But if she drinks it and she's fine, well, then it was your baby and it's good because it's not the baby that your wife created with the person she cheated with. So that's God saying, hey, if your wife cheats, yeah, have an abortion. It's cool. This is the stuff that's in the Bible, but he acts like, oh, I believe the Bible. I know the Bible. And, oh, God totally hates abortion. Let me tell you, dog. If God is so incredibly pro-life, and as you say he is on that issue, well, then what the fuck? Why are you not against the death penalty? You're for the death penalty, Brian Fisher. What happened to the pro-life thing? What happened to thou shalt not kill? What? How about all the different wars that we started? Wouldn't God be against those? Wouldn't you be on your radio show screaming about how we shouldn't have went into Iraq, we shouldn't have went to Afghanistan, we shouldn't be involved in the Middle East at all? And also, if you care so deeply about the Bible, what about the parts that you totally disregard, which is Jesus saying, hey, care for the poor? I never heard you give a pro social safety net rant. I never heard you talk about increasing the minimum wage. I never heard you talk about, hey, rich people are evil, as it says in the Bible. You never say that. You're cherry picking, and even when you cherry pick, sometimes you can't cherry pick right because you don't even necessarily know what's in the Bible. So you're just an embarrassing human being. And look at you. You're sitting there rationalizing and justifying the murder, the slaughter, the mass killing of all these kids at Sandy Hook. That doesn't make you a good person, that doesn't make you a Christian person, that doesn't make you a moral person, that makes you a bad person. Because what are you doing? You're trying to say, hey, in order to not kill more kids with mass shootings, let's end abortion. Instead of saying what real solutions might be, like, oh, I don't know, doing some kind of background check law, universal, close the gun show loophole, limit high-capacity magazines, do things of that nature, get the guns out of the hands of the people with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder and severe depression and three felonies and shit like that. No, you never do that, because he's another big Second Amendment guy, too, because Jesus loves the Second Amendment. He's out there like a chicken with his head cut off, doesn't know whether he's coming or going. He gets his talking points crossed, and he can't help but rationalize and justify why God was okay with the killing of kids at Sandy Hook. It's despicable. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, Chris Christie makes an ass of himself, no surprise. And then we get into Ted Cruz's story. You guys are going to get such a kick out of the Ted Cruz story. His new way of pandering to the right-wing base. All right, stay right there, guys. I'm hurt. I'm not the one who said I didn't want it to work. Spoke to Jake Tapper of CNN, and he outlined who he thinks is the biggest problem in American politics.
During your first term as governor, you were fond of saying that you can treat bullies in one of two ways. Quote, you can either sidle up to them, or you can punch them in the face. You said, I like to punch them in the face. At the national level, who deserves a punch in the face? Oh, the National Teachers Union, who's already endorsed Hillary Clinton 16, 17 months before the election.
Why?
Because they're not for education for our children. They're for greater membership, greater benefits, greater pay for their members. And they are the single most destructive force in public education in America. I've been saying that since 2009. I've got the scars to show it, but I'm never going to stop saying it because they never change their stripes.
This guy's embarrassing, man. This guy's embarrassing. And I got to tell you, I'm actually a little surprised as to how poorly he's doing now that the first debate is approaching. I thought that at this point in time in the election, he would have been able to surge a little bit and been higher in the polls. There are some polls that has this guy like 1%, man. That's disastrous. There was a story earlier today. He was at a horse racing event recently. The entire crowd was booing him. I'm like, oh my goodness, this is a guy who, for his last election, he won in a fucking landslide in that election. He got like 60% of the vote or something ridiculous in a blue state in New Jersey. So a bunch of people, including myself at the time, I was like, oh boy, look out. You know, you got to be a little careful here. This guy's a big Wall Street sellout. He's got the fake tough guy attitude that people on the right alike. But he still hasn't caught on, and perhaps he hasn't caught on because of shit like this. Really, dude? Really? Oh, yeah, who would I punch in the face on the national level? Teachers unions. Fucking teachers ruining America again. God damn it, guys. There you go again, educating our kids and whatnot. assholes. Who says that? For fuck's sake, man, just off the top of my head, as he was talking there, I jotted down just some of the groups of people who I think deserve a punch in the face a little more. Maybe Wall Street does, lobbyists, the military-industrial complex, billionaires who buy our system like Sheldon Adelson and the Koch brothers. Nope. Fucking teachers. Those goddamn teachers. No, but see, this is what happens when you have somebody who has internalized and wholeheartedly believes in the corrupt system that we have. We have a system of legalized bribery in America. We've had that system from the 1980s and onward, unfortunately. But in Chris Christie's mind, he sees no problem with that whatsoever. He knows who his sugar daddies are. He knows who's going to give him the money and who's going to try to prop him up to get him elected. So he would never take a swing at those guys who, by the way, are really destroying America because they set the agenda, and their agenda is against the American people and the middle class and the poor. So what does he do? He takes a swing at the most vulnerable. Oh, fucking teachers. They're so rich. They're doing a shakedown of everybody. How about you care so much about how much they're getting paid? What, max $100,000 for the best teachers in the best district? What about, I don't know, the bailouts of Wall Street? Billions and billions of dollars? They made bad decisions. They crashed the economy. They gave out predatory loans. They paid hot potatoes with these shitty mortgages. And then what happened? When everything goes belly up, the taxpayers rush in and bail them out. Those same teachers you're slamming, they're the ones who had to bail out the assholes on Wall Street who failed in a free market. I thought you're a free market guy. The way capitalism works is, hey, if you don't make a good product and you suck, tough. You're out of business. Well, these guys couldn't make it in the free market, and they failed. And what happened? People like Chris Christie wanted them to rush in and get bailed out. Oh, my God, have the government save these guys because they're the smartest guys in the room. I love this line of argument. They're going to lose the top talent if they don't bail them out. Talent? These guys crashed the economy. You should be happy to lose that talent. That's not talented. Anybody can bankrupt a company. You don't need to pay them money to make them stay. If anything, you pay them a little bit to make them fucking leave. These assholes are terrible. But he doesn't see it that way. He looks at a situation where 57% of discretionary spending goes to military spending, and he goes, right on, that's a fucking sacred cow, that's sacrosanct, you can't touch that. 57% needs to go to unnecessary wars overseas in the military-industrial complex. But, oh, the teachers, the fucking teachers, they're the ones who are really shaking us down, huh? They're the problem. No, the problem is not the teachers. Are there minor issues here and there with unions where sometimes some people get a little too lazy and tenure becomes an issue because people don't do their job as well and they get cozy or whatever? Sure, I'm willing to grant that in some circumstances that is an issue, and you can, you know, tweak some rules or laws to try to fix that. But what Chris Christie wants to do very clearly, because he's done it in the past, is throw out the baby with the bathwater. I found one teacher who's lazy in the union. Let's cut their pay 50% and let's get rid of tenure completely and fuck them. Pay them like $30,000 a year to teach your kids. You're concerned that teachers are getting paid too much. I'm concerned they're not getting paid nearly enough. We live in a country where, you know, we have misaligned priorities in many ways. I mean, they would be some of the first people that would get a pay hike if I were president or if I were in charge. But what does he do? He goes to the most vulnerable in society and he bullies them. He thinks they're bullies. No, Chris, you're the bully. You're the bully. You're the person that said, oh, my God, we can't afford to pay out on our pensions in New Jersey, as you were given millions in tax dollars to have the Super Bowl in New Jersey. You were given tax breaks to giant corporations that didn't fucking need it. You were giving tax cuts to the rich, as you said to middle-class workers, oh, we got to reform these pensions. They just cost too much. Anyway, any rich people want more money, you can raid the Treasury. No. Chris, you're the fucking problem. You're the problem. The lobbyists are the problem. Wall Street is the problem. The problem is not the teachers. The teachers are not ruining America. You and your Wall Street buddies are. Next. Gordon Klingenschmidt. We haven't spoken about this guy in a while either. Gordon Klingenschmidt is a crazy fundamentalist Christian, and he's a newly elected Colorado state representative, which is terrifying. And he provided us with a hilariously ironic and hypocritical moment to report to you today. So he had a Republican activist named Dwight David Doherty on his show, which is called Pray in Jesus' Name. I can't handle how silly they are. And they proceeded to bash liberals and bash LGBT activists and everybody who isn't exactly like them. I mean, you know how it goes on these far-right shows. And that's right in line with what Klingenschmitt usually does. In fact, on his show, he recently cited the following Bible verse, quote, "Whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depths of the sea." Wow. So he's really, really, really against child abuse. He's making that clear here. He also said the following about the Boy Scouts, quote, "If your boy is in one of those organizations, you need to get them out of there, because what they're going to do is promote homosexual men to mentoring and camping with your boys in the woods, and it will lead to child abuse." Oh boy. So, not only is he super against the abuse of kids, he made that clear citing Bible verse. In his mind, he thinks, well, come on, if the Boy Scouts allow gay people, they're immediately going to play with the kids' booty holes because they just can't help it. The gays are pedophiles. That's how it works. And he's made this comparison time and time again. He's implied it at other times. I mean, he's pretty clear. He's on the record that not only is he against the abuse of kids, he thinks gay people are much more likely to abuse kids, and he doesn't want any gays in the Boy Scouts. So this is just one of 9,000 offensive things that he said. But it's clear, if there's anything perfectly clear from watching Gordon Klingenschmitt's show, is that he's against child abuse. Except Dwight David Doherty, who he promoted, is convicted of child sexual assault. 1986 and 1995 was convicted of child sexual assault. Gordon Klingenschmitt had him on a show yucking it up with him. Ho, 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 Dwight, tell us more about what you're up to nowadays. Fucking any kids, are we? Look at these guys, man. Now, he says, oh, me? I didn't know. I didn't know, let me tell you. Yeah, I'm sure you didn't know. The same way, I mean, they did the same thing with Ted Haggard. They're so incredibly against all this child abuse, and they're against homosexuality. And oh, but it was our pastor, who we love dearly, who was caught with crystal meth and a gay hooker. Give him a pass. He's cool. No, he's just sinning. He's a good man. He was sinning. What are you going to do? Every once in a while, you want a cock, you want some crystal meth. Happens, man. Happens. No, see, let me explain to you the way it works with these guys. They're against wrongdoing if liberals do it, but if they do the same shit or worse shit, well, then, hey, I'm a good guy and I just slipped up. I slipped up. What are you going to do? Once in 86, once in 95, I saw a little Johnny changing in the room where, with the swimsuit. I said, oh, my God, I can't help myself. Oh, what are you going to do? It's little Johnny. God. I mean, have you seen little Johnny? See, the thing is, Gordon, the problem is not, and it never was, having gay people in the Boy Scouts, okay? According to various studies, gay people are no more likely to be child abusers than straight people. So what you're doing is you're trying to take isolated incidents of child abuse, you know, at various camps or whatever, and you're saying, hey, that defines the entire gay community. All gay people are guilty if one gay person does something. So you're trying to say discriminate against the entire community because of some incidents where bad things happened that were done by gay people. But that was never the case. It's never the case that all gay people are guilty of something like that. But what I'm beginning to believe, based on stuff like this and many, many other stories, is the loudest voices in the room, the ones who proclaim to be the most holy, and, oh, I'm totally against child abuse, oh, my God, and I'm against gays, and I'm against this, and I'm against that, all those holy rollers usually have the most to fucking hide. So what I'm seeing here is the problem is not with the LGBT community. The problem is with you, and the problem is with your ilk. Because I don't know how many different cases we have to give here to get it through everybody's head, But usually when people are super over the top against something, it's because they themselves are struggling with it. As Dan Savage puts it, they're externalizing an internal struggle. And remember, it's not just the anecdotal evidence, and we've given the list before of the top 20 anti-gay pastors caught having gay sex. There's also studies that back this up, man. Multiple studies. We've covered at least two on this show where they say, hey, you know, they hooked up, some sort of measuring device to electronic device or whatever it was to the genitals of different men and then showed them porn. And it turns out the guys who were ranked higher in the homophobia category, they were more likely to get turned on by gay porn. That's just one example. Another example is they say if you come from a very super religious background, a very moralistic right-wing background, and you're super anti-gay, usually that's a good indicator that you have those feelings. And you think that everybody struggles with it, so when you see somebody else give in to it, you're jealous. And you're like, fuck, why do they get to have the fun and I can't? Oh, I'm going to be super anti-gay now. This is the kind of thinking that goes on with guys like this. And it's always projection. Whether it's Gordon Klinkenschmitt or his child-assaulting guest here, they're the ones struggling with an issue, but what are they going to do? They're going to point the finger at liberals and the LGBT community and blame them time and time again. All right, next. By the way, I have another theory about that, too. Like, how super anti-gay people are usually gay. I honestly believe, I'm starting to believe now, that super racist people are jealous of the race that they're racist against. Like, all those, KKK guys, neo-Confederate guys, like the story we did the other day, how one of them was wearing FUBU shoes and didn't even fucking realize it, or pretended not to realize it, or whatever, or didn't know what FUBU stood for. I think that you look at those guys, and they look at black guys, and they think like, oh, fuck. I mean, these guys have it all. Women love them. They more set the culture. They're viewed more cool. They're looked at like they're more popular. I think that ultra-racist people might have a little hint of this anti-gay thing in them, where the anti-gay people are usually gay. The super-racist people are usually jealous in one way or another of black people. I mean, I could see, I don't know for sure, and to be clear, there hasn't been studies on that. There has been studies on the anti-gay thing, but I wouldn't be surprised, man. I wouldn't be surprised. And, hey, keep it real. We all know what the stereotype is about black dudes. They probably think, like, oh, here I am with a little tiny thing. And then you got Tyrone down the street with a thing hanging down to his knee. Goddamn, man, I'm a little jealous. You know what I'm saying? I could definitely see that. I could definitely see that. All right, anyway. I will elaborate more on that armchair pontificating theory I have at another time. A teacher at Forest Park Elementary School in Indiana thought it would be a genius idea to, quote, banish a 7-year-old student from sitting with other kids at lunch because he didn't believe in God. Brilliant move. Brilliant move. So the Washington Post says, quote, second grade teacher Michelle Meyer interrogated the student, who was identified with the initials AB, about his religious beliefs after he told his classmates on the playground that he did not go to church because he did not believe in God. As a result, the child was ordered to sit by himself during lunch for a 3-day period. Her actions caused great distress to AB and resulted in him being ostracized by his peers past the 3-day banishment. That's totally unsurprising. Miss Meyer required that AB sit by himself during lunch and told him he should not talk to the other students and stated that this was because he had offended them. Right. He offended. It's not you that's offended. It's the kids that are offended. And wouldn't you be offending him by making him sit away from them? Do you care about the fact that he might be offended? No, I know. He doesn't count now because he's an atheist. So this served to reinforce AB's feeling that he had committed some transgression that justified his exclusion. AB came home from school on multiple occasions crying, saying that he knows that everyone at school, teachers and students, hate him. Even now, AB remains anxious and fearful about school, which is completely contrary to how he felt before the incident. So, the family sued, which I say, good, you should, and the school district even came out and said, yeah, upon learning the facts of this story, oh, goodness. it's clear that under the Constitution, the teacher cannot do this, and it's not right for them to do this, and yada, yada, yada. Yeah, man. You got to make an example on this issue. You have to. Because, unfortunately, we've covered, what, 3-4 different stories in the past year or two, and these are just the ones that made the news, with similar bullying like this happening because a kid's an atheist. Now, I think people like you, if you listen to this show, there's a high percentage chance that you're a non-believer. You might not directly see or feel the anti-atheist discrimination and sentiment out there, but it's real. And you have to understand that not everybody has, I guess you'd call it a platform, even though it's just a YouTube channel, but we have a good number of followers, so not everybody's me, where if somebody makes fun of you and you're a little kid and you don't believe in God or whatever, the kid's not going to know, you're making fun of me? You believe in the book that's got a flat earth in it and seven-headed dragons. You're the silly person. Not every kid knows how to flip it. Not every kid knows how to defend it. Not every kid, you know, has thick skin in a social context and can get over the fact that some people might not like them. So what we're faced with is a situation where atheists are just simply a picked-on minority in many places. I mean, there are 7 states right now where on the books it's illegal for an atheist to run for office. Now, thankfully, that's clearly unconstitutional, and should anybody challenge those laws, they would fall immediately because it's crystal clear, what the answer is, and the answer is that that's unconstitutional. But the fact that it's still on the books says something about the attitude of people all around America. I mean, what is it? Over 70% of the country is Christian, and actual atheists, it's only about 3% or so. Now, over 20% is non-religious, but non-religious is not the same as atheist. That's a much broader category, non-religious. You could still believe in God, but not be part of a specific religion. You could have spiritual beliefs or whatever. Atheists, people who say, no, I actively don't believe in God, that's a much smaller percentage, and they do face more discrimination. And here's another case of it right here. We have a kid who is just, I don't believe that. And what happens? The teacher, who's supposed to be the more responsible, more respectful one, that go sit outside. Well, the problem is not the kid. The problem is you. And finally, let me say this. The brilliance of secularism is that it's neutral. It's neutral. So what that means is secularism doesn't come in with a gun and force you to not be a Christian, or force you to not be a Muslim, or force you to not be a Hindu, or force you to not be a Buddhist. You can be whatever the fuck you want to be with a secular state. But the key thing is the neutrality is not open for debate. It's an uncompromising neutrality. So in other words, what that means is, while you're allowed to be whatever the fuck you want to be religiously, you cannot, if you're a Christian or if you're a Muslim, if you're a Buddhist or a Hindu or whatever, you cannot take your religion and force it via the government onto everybody else. And that's exactly what this teacher is doing. You don't believe in God? You don't believe in Christianity? You don't believe in my God? Ostracized. And you make the kid cry, you make the kid feel bad, all the other kids gang up on the kid because they don't know any better, they're just little kids playing follow the leader, and the teacher's the leader. So what you've done is, in effect, you have made it so that we have a forced version of Christianity or deism on this poor kid who doesn't believe. The problem is not the kid. The problem is you. You need to learn a thing or two about secularism and abide by it or lose your fucking job. Okay, next. Now, oftentimes on the show, we talk about the issue of the Blue Shield. For those of you who don't know, the Blue Shield is just the idea that the police officers act behind a blue shield where they know it's this in-group, out-group mentality. Whatever they do, they'll protect their own, and you're the bad guy. If you're not in that blue family, well, you're the problem. So it's a theory. Many people believe in the theory. Many people dispute that it actually goes on. But here we have a case, this came out today, where it's fairly clear that, at least in some circumstances and in some instances, it's very real. So the Massachusetts Civil Service Commission found that the Methuen Police Department was giving preference to job applicants who vowed not to arrest fellow officers for driving drunk. What's so stunning about this story is how brazen it is. They're like, yeah, Blue Shield right here. This department believes in the Blue Shield, son. Let us tell you. All right, let me give you more. They say, quote, the city turned the interview process upside down. There is simply no valid basis to award the highest points to candidates who express a willingness to apply one set of rules to strangers and another set of rules to friends and family members. Ding info. Now, the police department defended itself, though, and here's what they said. Quote, this is one of the lieutenants. I'm looking for some bearing, some honesty, and how quickly the person can think on their feet. The idea is that someone who claims they wouldn't give preferential treatment to friends and family is lying. Quote, some of the interview panelists actually heaped high praise on those candidates who stated that they would arrest a stranger but not arrest a friend or family member based on the same facts, citing their understanding of discretion. Apparently, there was one applicant who was refused the job after saying he would arrest his parents if he caught them drunk driving. He was called insincere, and it was said that he had, quote, a lack of discretion. People who have friends and family in the police department, however, seem to do very well on the applications. Five of the candidates who had connections, they were hired. All right, that is so illuminating and so telling, and it's just a little piece of information here, but it says a trillion things. So if your dad or your uncle or somebody in the family was a police officer and the police department knows they're not going to rock the boat, they're a good guy, they're on team us, well, then they say, look, my nephew here, my kid here, they're on our side too, and they're not going to fuck around. They're not going to rock the boat at all. They're not going to stand on principle. They're not going to really uphold the law if one of us violates it. So let this one into the club. And they're clear. They say, we specifically let people go if they said, I will uphold the law. Justice, remember, the whole idea of what America is supposed to be is justice is blind. So it doesn't matter if the president violates the law or if it's a janitor in Cleveland. You both violated the law. You're going to go to jail. Okay, that's the idea of America. Here they're saying, no, the exact opposite. Let's, you know, act like a banana republic or a fascist country. If you're in with the good guys, well, then you get to do whatever you want. Scary, man. I think we all knew to a certain extent, or many of us knew, I should say, to a certain extent that the Blue Shield was real. I was unaware of how brazen it is in some circumstances, where, like, it's a fucking job requirement. You can't have this, man. You have to. Whoever's in charge, whoever calls the shots, I don't know the way the chain of command works or whatever. You gotta fucking fire the department and start from scratch. This is insanity. Now you know, and remember, Michael A. Wood Jr. of Baltimore, former Baltimore police officer, he talks about this all the time. He says, look, lying is something they do all the time. Now you know that this department is guaranteed to lie. How am I supposed to trust if there's a situation where an unarmed black person dies in creepy circumstances? How am I supposed to trust the word of the police officer when they're telling you we're only hiring people who refuse to go after their own? So then I already know that you're going to say, well, and we're not at fault, reach for my gun, did something bad, did something wrong, that's why I had to kill him. But they're letting you know, I'm not going to base it on the facts, I'm not going to say what's true, I'm just going to say what's going to protect my own ass. That's the opposite of what police are supposed to do. Protect and serve us is the idea, not your own ass. So as Michael A. Wood Jr. said time and time again, he's like, what, do you think that the black community has been lying to everybody for decades? No, they're telling the truth, man. The police are oftentimes an occupying army that only care about their own. There's another story in the news today. A different police officer threatened to murder a black guy. Now, thankfully, he had some sort of recording device on him because he was harassed by this police officer for an extended period of time. So he caught him red-handed. But guess what? That police officer still has a job. Why? Because of the Blue Shield. And also, they settled out of court, and he got, however, I don't know how much money he got. Not a lot. I think it was like 35 grand or something like that. But that guy's still working. No, but that's insane. If a guy threatens to murder people and he's still a police officer, that guy shouldn't be a police officer. That guy should be in jail. Justice should be blind. The Blue Shield shouldn't be so clear. In this case, it is crystal clear. You got to fire this police department. You got to start from scratch. Either that or don't get mad when the black community, for example, says, we don't like any cops. We don't like all cops. Don't get mad when they say that, especially in places like this, because if they say that and they live in this town, that makes sense. That's a logical conclusion to draw. Not because they're biased, but because of your actions. You're asking for it now when people start to blame all cops, because you're saying our entire department is corrupt and we're cool with it. Okay, then fuck all of you. How about that? Okay. Finally, Ted Cruz. The Independent Journal Review, which is a conservative outlet, released this video of Ted Cruz really working hard for that right-wing primary vote.
A few things I enjoy more than on weekends cooking breakfast with the family. Of course, in Texas, we cook bacon a little differently than most folks.
He's got a machine gun, and he's going to make bacon with the machine gun. They're currently wrapping bacon to the barrel of an assault weapon. Wrapping it in tinfoil, and now he's going to shoot the gun. Shot the gun until it was, the barrel was very hot, and it actually cooked the bacon.
Machine gun bacon.
Crispy, it's just the way I like it.
Well, you got my vote. The sad thing is, you know that that's how a lot of people reacted to this. Plenty of voters in Kentucky and Arkansas and Tennessee and Alabama and Mississippi. Let me reenact their response to this. Ted. Oh, machine gun bacon. Oh, I just blew my load. Come on, Ted. No, I was going after Hillary Clinton the other day for her Dorothy ad where she's exploiting her dead mother and talking about her memory, and there's so many other Dorothys out there to try to get votes. I hated that ad. I still hate that ad. It's horrific. But this is the right-wing version of that. The right-wing version of that is like, Jesus, guns, bacon, vote for me. No policy substance, not even pretending to be, intelligent or care about the actual issues. Gun, bacon, eat. Vote for me. It's so sad that certain percentage of the population is going to watch that and go, ha ha, Ted Cruz with the bacon and the guns, and you know he's one of us. He's shooting the gun, eating the bacon. Ha ha, he does a NASCAR ad. I'll vote for him for dictator. Let me tell you that. All right, I'm out of time, guys. Love you. See you tomorrow. Peace.